People, here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Bet you didn't know that. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes that come together. Natural gas, more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free. That's a lot of percent from the impurities you'd find in crude oil. So the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence IVA wear tests using SAE 5W30. Find at Firestone Complete Auto Care. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, a 5-hour energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. It has zero sugar, 4 calories, exactly 4. What a random number. And a convenient portable size. It's the perfect pick-me-up for a busy, hardworking person. Now, it comes with 2 great extra-strength tropical tastes, strawberry banana and tropical burst. Ooh, they are delicious. It can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both and then go online to shop the number 5hourenergy.com and use the code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. Go to shop5hourenergy.com. Use the promo code LOW to receive a one-time offer of 10% off. 5-Hour Energy, energy on the go.
And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to a mini Low Post podcast live from the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, where my guest, for like the 5th year in a row, just did his mic check by saying, instead of 1-2-3-3-2-1, 3-1-4-5-9-1-5-9. Pi. So obviously,
just to mess with you.
Obviously, it's Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Rockets. How are you?
Thanks for having me on. Usually give me a nice, like, he's tired, he's bedraggled.
You look better this year for end of Sloan.
Yes. I enjoy it. Yeah. Had fun with table tennis this year.
Who won?
Xiao Shu? Is that her name? Yeah. Kager.
I don't know.
Kager won. Kager.
Okay.
Jessica's coming.
So I'm obligated to ask, you were at the center of the biggest story in sports this year. How are you doing? Is there any update that you can share?
I think I've said what I've said there.
Okay, fair enough. When you get to a moment and you know we're going to trade Clint Capela, we're going to get a wing, and the whole NBA world is going to go like, this is heterodox, this is blasphemous, blah, blah, blah. Like, are you in the room? Do you know that's coming? Were you excited, or were you just sort of like, we think this makes our team better?
I have a question for you first.
Oh boy.
If on the same day we made that trade, we had also traded for Tyson Chandler, do you think the uproar would have been as big?
I mean, Tyson Chandler now, or like a theoretical, like Tyson Chandler two years ago?
Tyson Chandler now, like, yeah.
Well, you have Tyson Chandler. Is that your point?
That's my point, yeah. Everyone was like, they don't have a 7-footer. I was like, we have Tyson Chandler.
Well, he doesn't play.
Yeah, but that's because we're choosing not to play him right now. So, but he's there anyway. No, we felt like it was a move we had to make. Obviously, we're focused on our chance to win the championship. And we were a good team. We needed to be a great team, and we thought this gave us the best chance to be great. And we'll see.
How do you think it's going? It's been interesting because, like, big post-up guys have not hurt your team yet. Anthony Davis, it was him getting his own offensive rebounds more than the initial shot that hurt you guys. So, like, how is it? I know what the numbers are, but how do you think it's going so far?
Yeah, I mean, we're thrilled. Obviously, we wish we were 12-2 or something. I think we're 10-4 now since not playing with Clint. And, we feel like this is the best way. I think our job is obviously get great players, great superstars, hopefully – probably at least 2 to win the title, and maybe more, but we have 2. And then find the right fits around them. And we feel like with James and Russell, but probably even a little more Russell is what we've learned, having spacing and shooting and driving lanes, I think is, you know, if you're gonna win with those two guys, I think that's the best way to play.
So I saw you the day you made the CP for Russ trade.
Really?
And everybody.
Where did I see you?
Las Vegas.
Oh, CP for Russ. I thought you were saying Sorry, I thought you said Clint for...
No, not that day.
I was like, wow.
The CP for Russ trade. Yes. And I remember when thinking about that trade, we all understood that you were adding a guy who was, let's say, not a great three-point shooter to your team in place of a guy who is a great three-point shooter. And we all fretted about what's that going to do to James' spacing, blah, blah, blah. And so we've had this this cycle of, well, the first way defenses responded was they just started double-teaming James. And James responded to that by making the right play. Guys are getting open threes. You responded to that by saying, okay, now we have two non-shooters on the floor and Russ and Clint. Let's make it one instead of two. How, when you're talking about that trade and talking about adding Russ to your team, it's a big chance. Like, did you see any of that progression coming? Did you think about Harden double teams and all that? Or is this all just like organically unfolding?
The Russ trade was really about similar to actually the Clint trade in that we just felt like you can't win unless you've got a peak level that's very high. And we thought with Chris and James, we were an extremely good team. And in fact, in 18, you can argue the best team. And I think Golden State, to be fair, is probably the best, but we were right there with them. And we felt like that the team we had with Chris and James was extremely good, but was going to come up short of the title. And we thought that adding Russ, who I think unquestionably has this peak level of play that not many guys have reached, was the right move. I think at the time, you know, it was fair for them to point out maybe some of the fit issues. But we didn't know, like, we felt good about playing with Clint. But as time went by and Coach D'Antoni worked with Russell, worked with James, I think we're like, you know what? We're going to have, like, a lot of it's the evolution of how people guard James.
Yeah, did you see the double teams coming? Did you see the, like, there's never been a player like this where he crosses half court and two
or
guys
before,
are on
him. Or even before, or like as he's dribbling up. And I think it's the first time.
Did you know it was going to happen? Did you
forecast
it?
I don't think you know. I don't think we know anything's going to happen for sure, but I, you know, there's very smart teams out there, very good coaching staffs, and it's not that hard when you look at, hey, here's how the Rockets score, and here's their most efficient option, and they're going to it over and over, and these other options are here. That gap, as soon as it gets big, which it is, and I explain this to James all the time, he's like, you know, it's amazing they double team me. I was like, well, you should be flattered. That means because you're so much better than everyone else, and that gap is big. And so as soon as the double teams came, you know, then Clint screens became just double team escorts, you know, right, where he'd get doubled. Or they would just switch it, right? And then we'd rarely get to a traditional pick and roll coverage where we get to a lob threat. And so as that evolved, I think we were only getting to a lob threat like 1 in 5 or 1 in 4. You know, it became a natural evolution to go to 4-out spacing.
The trade of Clint marks a milestone in that I believe you have 0 of your own first round picks on your team.
Well, we do in effigy. You know, they've been sacrificed to the gods of winning now.
But my point, but my question is like, but that's what you've you have gone. It's the, you before James Harden were accumulating picks and, you know, traded Kyle Lowry, a very good player, for a good pick that ended up being the critical piece to get you James, I think. Since getting James, I think you very correctly have gone the other way of like, we got a superstar, a top whatever player. We just got to go all in. So all those picks are like, and you can trace them back. Lou Williams, try to open up cap space for Bosch, the whole deal. You gave up a lot for Chris. And then you gave up.
And
you gave up a decent amount. We could argue over how much to switch from CP to Russ. Have you, in the aggregate, when you zoom out, do you think in trading away the future for the present, you've gotten enough value?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I don't understand the teams that hang on to their picks when they're close like this. And the, you know, people can go look those teams up. Like, you know, you should, when you're close, and for us, that's above 5% chance to win the title, which we're comfortably over right now.
You think you're over that right now?
Yeah, I mean, Vegas and others would have us comfortably over that. I think you need to be, and they do constrain how much of the future you can give up, which I also think is smart for the league. I do think the step-in rule is smart.
You think they should have the step-in rule for people who
I do. I mean, I think if you're a very well-run, rational team, I would prefer the rule not to be there. I like less rules. Less rules are good for us. But I think from a macro perspective, the league has to think about making sure teams are sellable and stuff like that. Yeah. So I think it's a rational thing, but to the extent the league limits it, I think it makes sense to go to the max when you have a chance. Cause honestly, generally when teams drop out of contention, the average time they get back to contention is 8 years. We've looked at this, and that's when you get back. There are some teams still in the wilderness. You know, they're still, they've still left Egypt and they're still in the wilderness meandering around trying to find a homeland of the playoffs. And that, you know, and I think the 8 year average is going to go up when some of those teams make it back and they're going to up the average. So when you're out, you're out. When you're in, you should go for it.
Let's go through some recent Rockets history. 2018, you just mentioned. Obviously that's pain for you, but, when 2017, 18, yeah, game seven. I think it was Justin Termini, our radio host, was tweeting about you guys a few days ago. I don't remember about what triggered
He's a big Rockets fan.
Yeah. What triggered his tweet? But he said, you know, I don't know what you were protesting or stuff. Well, I don't know what it was. Maybe the
NBA. I can explain it.
Well, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
You don't care.
What he said was, here go the Rockets again. They've won nothing. James Harden has won nothing. And we had NBA Countdown that night, and we got in a big good-natured argument in the pre-show room. Because I said, I hate that line of thinking because, and I said this before, I've said it publicly, I'm not saying this because you're here, like the entire league just laid down for the Warriors. And there was one team that didn't. And for some reason, and you took them to the limit, and Chris Paul got hurt in game five. For some reason, that series has become known as the series the Warriors almost lost rather than the series the Rockets almost won. Do you feel that? Like, do you feel like, is that, do you feel that that's the perception of it and the unfairness of it or no?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, there aren't a lot of people outside of Houston rooting for the Rockets for various reasons. We don't have to go into them. I think my point that Justin or Ricky Bobby was telling you that I was making was just basically, I think it's stupid that the playoffs are like literally you get told on these telecasts how these games don't matter constantly by the announcers, radio hosts, whatever, because the only thing that matters is the playoffs. And then even for whatever reason, coming close in the playoffs is also not valuable. So yeah, I just think the Ricky Bobby ization of sports is not is probably not a good thing for ratings.
Well, James has had, look, let's be frank, James has had some low moments in the playoffs, and he hasn't, I don't think, and Bill and I did a big podcast about this, I don't think James has really a signature playoff moment yet in his career, signature positive playoff moment yet in his career. He's got a couple signature negative ones and then a bunch of really good games, like really good James Harden games.
I mean, it's going back, but the series
San
against
Antonio.
The Spurs, yeah.
The good one, the Thunder series against the Spurs.
Yeah, Thunder against the Spurs, yeah.
But he also, like, we just need to get out of this mindset that, like, it's the champion and a bunch of losers. Like, a bunch of, like, he's won nothing and these guys have accomplishment. No, it's actually, like, taking that Warriors team to seven was a real accomplishment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and Bill James talks about this, like, you know, there are games that go down to the last shot. I mean, the Toronto, was it Toronto Bucks series came down to that? Kawhi?
Toronto Philly.
Philly, sorry. Yeah, it's late and I'm tired. Toronto Philly comes down to a Kawhi miss. I mean, that's a miss. That thing hit the side of the hoop. That's like a 10% shot, but it goes in, and I think correctly, obviously they put themselves in the place to win, so they win, but every narrative shifts based on a 10% shot. So if you're in a close game and a close series and it comes down to a last shot, really both teams won, both teams lost. You shouldn't draw massive narratives based on whoever won or lost that. I know that's how people do it, but the reality is it's all sort of nonsense.
Last year you play them again in the second round and Durant gets hurt. And everyone says, okay, now – this is their opportunity. They have to win. This is their opening. It's open. Did you feel that internally?
Yeah, this year. Yeah.
This past year. This is the 2018.
Oh, when KD
gets hurt in the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I mean, frankly, we've talked about it. Okay, how long can our run last where we are a legit title contender, which I still believe we are and will be going forward. But the question often becomes, what's going to be our best chance? And I always answer the same, and, you know, hopefully I'm wrong, but it's always that moment that is our best chance, I think. In 18, I said, I think this is our best moment. Last year, you know, we get to game six with the Warriors. I think this is our best moment. Right now is our best moment. I mean, you know, you get so many swings, and I still think we have lots of good hacks at it, you know, lots of good real solid probability hacks at winning the title. But, you know, you're most likely, the ones you're in right now are the most likely.
Basketball season is heating up. Some teams are coming together like the Clippers while others are falling behind. It's their drive and momentum that will determine who raises the trophy at the end of the season. Goodyear knows that no matter what road we're on, movement is the key to unlocking your potential. Because growth isn't a straight line. It's a winding road traveled in pursuit of possibility. It's time to discover what possibilities lay ahead. Goodyear, more driven. If you want a simple, smart, and easy way to purchase tickets to an event, you know where to go. SeatGeek. SeatGeek has millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee. You can search for sports, live music, comedy, everything all in one place. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. You don't have to go to 10 different secondary market websites. Just one spot. It rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10 and displays them on an easy-to-use interactive seat map. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots, maybe not quite as good. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. That's very important, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. We could all use a little more confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's a non-trivial amount off of a ticket to a basketball game. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOW, and bam, $10 off your first purchase. So you lose game six at home to the Warriors. Everyone, as you said, is already just kill the Rockets for losing at home to the Warriors. Everyone is just like drooling.
You're usually very fair, Zach.
I'm not saying me. I'm saying the collective media drool is coming down. And then reports start to come out like, oh, there was stuff happening in the locker room, Chris and James, some sniping. Like, so what do you remember of the aftermath of that game? Because I could imagine that game probably felt like, as you just said, we missed a moment. Everyone is grappling with the emotions of that. What are your flashbulb memories of that locker room?
Well, just to go back to that game, I my biggest disappointment was our fourth quarter. Just our execution was pretty bad. And credit to the Warriors. I mean, obviously they played fantastic. Locker room wise, it's the first time ever where I met with Mike right after, and it was so much pain. Usually you do the like exit stuff like shortly after because everyone wants to go on vacation among the players especially, which is deserved. And Mike and I looked at all the faces of everyone and said, man, like, we just can't make these guys sit here and talk about this in like 48 hours. Like it. And so that's the first time ever. And I actually think it went well. I think we got a lot of good rational thinking and not a lot of like frozen anger ideas generated. So I like the path we took since then. I really think we're on a really good path to get through the West. And, but it was tough. Yeah.
Did you know in that locker room that you were going to have to make a big change?
No, in fact, I really thought the opposite. Everyone's like, oh, you knew you were going to make this trade or not. And I honestly, I think, you know, I'm a pretty straight shooter with the media. I was adamantly telling people we weren't going to make a big trade because that is really, really strong what I believe. Now, there's no way I could have anticipated the Paul George, you know, situation opening up that option. Like, that option seemed just not even in our set of possibilities. In retrospect, maybe I could have anticipated it, but I didn't. So
what's the most important thing you look for in a head coach? Like, what's the most important job of a head coach?
I love that question. I mean, there's stupid answers like win, obviously. So I'll just put those to the side. I'll just speak for myself. I like someone who I'm being challenged by. So Mike just comes in and constantly is like, hey, we should do that. You know, without, and I think it's going to work, but the reality is without Mike D'Antoni, this Clint for Covington trade never happens. I'd be shocked. There's very many coaches in the league where I can get that trade done. And the reason I say that is as a GM, if you're making what is a pretty big gamble, if you don't have the coach on board and in a way that he understands how to use what we're going to try and do, you can't make that. It's just too risky, too much given up. And the fact that Mike, I was like, hey, we're going to do this. You know, if there's a five that makes some sense, we'll look at it. But frankly, I think it makes sense maybe not to do it at all. And Coach D'Antoni saying, I trust what you guys are doing. I see what you're doing. We're going to make it work. That means so much. And so that's what I look for the most. Someone who challenges me, works with the whole organization, and can execute.
Have you and Charles Barkley made amends? What's your current status?
To be fair to him, when he said he wouldn't know me walking in one time, that's fair. I mean, I know him because he's like one of the greatest players ever. Yeah. And one of the best players and entertainers ever. You know, I don't think we've, you know, mended or whatever. Like, what's before amends? Like, you know.
Yeah, non-mend.
Yeah. I don't think he worries too much about the Rockets or me, and nor should he. Like, I mean, it's not a huge deal. I think, you know, he's one of the all-time great evening hosts and players, and he does way better than I could do at any of that.
In 2030, if the Earth is not burned down,
the Earth is going to be fine. Do you want me to help you on that?
I would love to reassure me.
We'll get the couch, and I'll make you feel better.
Okay. What percentage of three-pointers will the team taking the most threes in the league, what percentage of their shot attempts will be threes?
I don't know. I mean, I think probably around half would be my guess.
You're already doing that now.
Yeah, no. I just think it's not going to get a lot more. There's still an equilibrium between being able to attack the basket and shooting from the perimeter. I mean, that's – basketball's been around that. I mean, honestly, people make it sound like this radical thing, but really all that most teams have done is replace their, you know, shots from 6 to 24 feet 9 inches to being past 24 feet 9 inches or 22 in the corners.
But you don't think we'll get to a point where a team's like 70% of their shots are threes? 60%?
No. I mean, the only way that could happen is if every team guarded them the same way. They all packed the paint. I just don't see it. So,
do you like the Elam ending?
Love the Elam ending. Love. Needs more. Should start with overtime in the NBA.
That idea. Why not?
It's just easy. Just do it. Yeah.
I think we're going to see it in places. I think it's going to be in the G League showcase. If Adam Silver gets the midseason tournament, I think it'll be in the midseason tournament. I think it's gonna be a. There is a world in 50 years, it's just how basketball is played. Now I don't know if that's like a 15% likelihood.
How you play until you watch the NBA. Yeah. Like when you're a kid, you just play. It's pickup. It's easy. And can I rant about the midseason tournament? Because look, here's the thing. Everyone's like, I hate the midseason tournament. Right? What was it 80%? Seemed like. Didn't like it, maybe?
Or 80% is like, didn't like it, plus no strong feeling either way is equals
okay,
80%.
Okay, fine. Right. So here's the thing. We're in a fight for attention and ratings, and we're one of the top of the heap in this, and we've got to keep innovating. And so let's say the first midseason tournament idea you don't like. That's very fair. It could be a bad idea. We got to start doing stuff like that, and then we'll fix it. Like, but if you don't start, if you smother the baby in the crib, like, then we're never going to innovate. We're never going to find these more interesting solutions. So my mission to everyone is don't worry about the first idea. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be pretty good, and then we'll iterate from there and make it better.
The play-in tournament is also a no-brainer.
Love it.
That needs to go in.
Yeah.
Two more quick ones. You are a Western
Conference. You didn't brand it after yourself like others, so yeah.
Oh, hey, Bill. You're a Western Conference general manager.
Yes.
Have been for a long time. breaking news to you, the West is better than the East still.
It is. Despite, oh, I mean, Milwaukee, I think, is undisputably the best team. People should.
Fine. Top six in the East is very good. 7-15 is a little bit ugly.
Yep.
Next year in the West, barring some changes, and things could change, trades could be made, all 15 teams, I think, could look at their season ticket holders and say, we have a realistic chance to make the playoffs. Obviously, some teams will have bigger ambitions than that. But I think all 15 teams, with like a semi straight face, could say we have a chance to make the playoffs. Has that ever happened before? Is that unusual? It must be unusual, right? Mm. And like, have we all given up on 1-16 as a solution to this?
I don't like 1-16. I'm like in the real minority there. Yeah, we need more variance. Our sport is just crushed for variance. So the 16-1 is just, you know,
okay,
not interesting to me. I honestly, our division, the fact that the most recent top picks that are great have gone in our division are really, really frustrating.
Yeah. Zion and Ja.
You can't say
their names. Yeah.
Okay. So,
last one, cause you have to go to one of your many Sloan events. This is a very serious question. I'm going to levy an accusation against you and force you to defend yourself. Have you forced your family, your loved ones, to watch the television show Love is Blind?
I suggested, I had a friend tell me it was good, and then I watched it, and it's just a really interesting experiment. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they like The Bachelor, and so I was like, this is like The Bachelor times 10. It's great.
Is it over now? Is it coming back?
It's over. Yeah. It just ended. Yeah. Yeah.
What? Was there love? Was love blind? What's the end?
They tried to use some anecdotal evidence to declare if love is blind, but yeah, two people got married without meeting each other. Spoiler alert.
And are they still married?
That I don't know. I haven't Googled to find out. Oh! I'm getting from the peanut gallery. Yes.
You usually have you have good pop culture taste, and you're proud of your good pop culture. You're a Broadway expert. You release your top 10
like
movies.
You don't like this?
It just seems like something I wouldn't like. What was your number one movie? Your number one movie was Knives Out. Was your best
Knives
movie
Out,
there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta see Knives Out.
Knives Out, great. Yeah.
I trust your
judgment. I got depressed because a lot of my friends who know movies, they're like, it's just another whodunit. I was like, no, man, it's better. But.
Do you want to weigh in before we go on the Giannis James Harden feud? Do you want to stoke the fires at all?
I don't think it's a big deal, honestly.
I like it. I think it's good. They appear to actually not like each other or have some sort of distaste for each other. I think that's good.
I think James focuses on himself and trying to be as good as he can. He's not someone, honestly, that goes at people, but you know, when others say stuff about him, sometimes he'll go back.
Oh, I do have one more question about James being that good.
Yes.
When did you realize?
I love talking about James being good.
When did you realize? I don't know if you're like watching him practice one day, but like the evolution of your team from pick and roll to ISO with Clint Capella in the dunker spot to ISO with nobody anywhere in the paint is defined, I think, by James mastering the step back three. It really changed your team. It changed basketball. When did you realize, like, I don't know if there's a moment in a practice or something that like, oh, he's actually going to do this in games.
I remember this off season. Maybe 2 years ago or three. I can't remember.
It's probably three off seasons ago now.
And I compare it to when James actually first came with us in 12, he was shooting from 30 feet and just practicing those. And I was like fully on board. I was like, it's great. Doesn't matter. You're going to shoot them just as well, almost as 25. What a good idea. More spacing. Great. Step back. I see him doing, and I'm nervous because I'm like, that's like a 20% shot. Like, I'm like, that thing is so hard. You're like, I just have a fundamental belief you have your momentum away from the hoop. It's too hard. I have all these like preconceived biases, and I don't say anything because I was just practicing it, whatever. It was similar to the one-legged one. I was like, whatever. He's trying different things. He's an innovator with the handles, with the shot. But it did come up once and I was like, it's a tough shot. That's what I said. I just said it's a tough shot. And then he starts making it like 40%. And I'm like, we have the greatest player ever. It's insane. I don't know how he does it.
It's crazy how much that shot changed your team and what was possible and how you should play.
And how we're guarded and double teams and you got people guarding him from behind. I mean, can you imagine if Red Auerbach was with us to see that kind of defense?
And I remember when he first started doing it a couple seasons ago, my first reaction to reserves was like, well, this is crazy. This won't work. Like, this is a crazy shot. There's it's no crazy. Way he's going to be able to make this enough times for it to go in.
I mean, people have enough trouble on pin downs, having their full momentum go away from the hoop, making like a 19-footer, although people have mastered it, you know, Rip Hamilton. I mean, there's like a list of guys, but to do it from 27 feet with a guy in your face is
I assume the math still works in your favor even if he never got fouled in a world without any three-shot fouls.
Yeah, they're working at that. But, yes.
All right. You've got to go. Daryl Morey, general manager of the Rockets, thank you for your time. Enjoy, I hope, season two of Love is Blind. You know, you can get behind that. And good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Zach.